It's awesome there. There's just so much nostalgia in a moment like this, and coming together in the way that we did. And what a surprise to have Richard here with us. Really, that's been actually the ultimate, because 11 and a half years ago he came and he planted there. And what was cool, actually, I don't think Leonard mentioned it, but I've actually spoken to Richard a couple of times. So with the sound guys, I'll make a deal with you guys. Put me off a little bit lower, and then I'll speak very loud, and I think we'll be able to cut away the feedback. Is that so? All right. So, okay, you need to work with me. So, all right. So, Richard spoke to me several times, and what he has said to me is, as he is in the early days when none of us were here, when he and the 24 were grinding it out Sunday for Sunday and actually plowing the ground for much of what we are experiencing now, he would say many times he will drive past this hall and think, how awesome would it be if Josh Jens Stellenbosch can one day meet in here? And many times his prayer was for this hall, Richard, for this hall, that Josh Jens Stellenbosch would actually meet here. And so when I saw him today, look, Richard is not the most emotional guy that I know, but there was definitely something of the answer of prayer that he is able to witness today, which is really cool. So we praise Jesus for that. The second point that I want to make, and I just want to jump off from the worship and this last word. I think Leonard in his deep theology has helped us here with the word holiness, right? And he's the problem with holiness, as so many would interpret it, or in our minds, will be just the absence of sin. And so God is not holy, meaning he doesn't sin. God is holy because he's set apart, he's set above. And then what God comes to us is he's saying, now I want you to be holy. Now I want to tell you about my life. There's parts in my life that is set apart for God. But there's parts in my life that is without sin. It's got the absence of sin. And so somehow I fool myself and sometimes put it in the category of holiness. But it's not holy, because it's not set apart to God. My finances, I have to confess, it's many times absent from sin. I don't buy, I don't get drunk on my finances. I don't go to prostitutes with my finances. I promise you. But I'm thinking, even though there's the absence of sin in my finances, there's been time that my finances were set apart for God. It was holy. And there's parts of my life that has just become neutral. Maybe not any accusation of sin, but it's not holy. You know, this plant here, beautiful as it is completely without sin. You know? And if our aim is merely the absence of sin, we're not much better than this plant or the chair that you sit on. God is not asking for the mere absence of sin. He's calling us tonight. It was such a cool word. I think it's the Lord. He's calling us to be set apart, to be holy. And I trust that somehow tonight, that which has just become neutral at least, or sinless at the very best, but not holy. That even as we declare tonight, God, you are holy, 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 this last song, that something of us will be just set apart for him again. Every area of our lives, God, set apart for you, holy, holy. So the verse that I want us to read tonight and start off is in Matthew 6, verse 24. Now, I can't read it. I'll try. I've got a personal trainer. I can tell you guys. If you wonder how I've lost so much weight and why I suddenly look so good, his name is John. His name is John. His classes is awesome. And with him, I'm able to improve my flexibility so I can actually read this. In all humility, no one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. Now, firstly, I want to say that when Jesus is calling us and making this quest of saying, look, you can't serve two masters, he assumes that you already considered him as a master. Jesus is not speaking to people that have not considered him as a master. This is clearly people that have said, God is my master. And so this verse is not written or related to those that is in the world, those that are in the pubs right now, those that is in the world, those that are splashing in the money and want nothing to do with God. No. This verse is given to those that have declared, Jesus, you are my Lord. Which I would assume most of us in this room have done and is gladly confessing. Very, very unpopular thing to do in this room. Jesus is not my master. You know, don't try it here. We like the guys that says, Jesus is my master. That's the in thing to do here around here. Right? And most of us here says that. And so this verse is for you. These are the guys that Jesus is speaking to us. And he says, it's no problem. It's no problem. You say, I'm your master. My problem is that I'm not alone your master. And subtly in your life, there are different things except me that drives you. There are different things except me that is leading you and satisfying you. I alone want to be your master. Now, that principle is for all, you know, all masters, obviously. But this verse specifically points out one master, and he points out money. Now, you know, the daunting thing of preaching at a night to tonight, audience is important. When you preach, you think of an audience. You think of, who am I preaching to? You see the faces. When I preach before 9 to a.m. congregation, I see the guys, and I'm thinking, when I say this, it's going to hit that chord and that guy. I can see it. And I've got certain people in mind as I speak. As I was coming to tonight, suddenly I realized I don't have that group. I have them, but I have a whole other group as well. And so if I speak to that group, I might become irrelevant to that group. If I speak to that group, I might get irrelevant to that group. And so the audience kind of threw me a little bit as I prepared, because you can see when Paul writes a letter, he's got very much an audience in mind, and because of that audience, he writes what she writes. And so I'm thinking to myself, who's my audience? What am I saying? What's the faces that I'm considering? I'm surprised how many faces I actually knew of know here with all the PM crowds. But I decided then the best thing to do, when in doubt, just ask God. So I'm like, all right, Jesus, I don't know. I don't know who I'm speaking. I don't know what's the need. It is like a blind man walking into a room. I don't know. And as I closed my eyes, immediately felt this verse, and I felt like there's two masters, more than one master that God wants to address tonight. But I feel like one of the masters that he wants to highlight, especially tonight, is money. And I feel like subtly money and the influence of money has taken a bigger space in our lives in the way that we are driven and make decisions than what we should. I'll just say this thing. God judged in the New Testament two people that I can think of severely. Two guys that in the New Testament, I'm not speaking Old Testament, New Testament. Two New Testament guys that God stepped into the place and judged people so badly that they die. Number one, Judas. And number two, well, it's a couple, so let's give it three. Ananias and Sapphira. And both, all three of them were judged because somehow, somewhere, the root of money have taken a bigger course in their heart than what Jesus intended. And all of them, all three of them would have told you, Ananias and Sapphira would have told you, I've left my town, I left everything to follow the church. I give him everything. That's what they declare. He's my Lord. I give him everything. Just this little bit on the side that I'm keeping for myself. Are you sure you're giving everything, Ananias and Sapphira? Yes, I do. I do. I sing it in my songs. I jump high when I cry out in worship. Yes, I do. Are you sure, Ananias and Sapphira? Poor Judas, right? Look, all that we want is a kiss from Jesus. It's not much. He would have never thought that would have happened. Never thought they're going to crucify him the way that they did. Here's a little side deal. It doesn't take much, just one kiss. And somehow that root of money have just influenced him to make a decision contrary to the kingdom. And I know it seems radical in some ways, but I feel like there's something that the Lord wants to come and search out our hearts and make sure and eradicate that there's no other master tonight. That we will walk away here and say, we have not only Jesus as our master, but we have Jesus as our only master. And so there's a story of the rich young ruler. By the way, the Bible never gives him that name. He never gives him that name. It's a name that we, after a while, has given to him. But he comes to Jesus, and he's like one of those on-fire Christians. Really, he is. He's done everything that's been asked of him. He's went to Starting Point. He goes to Calm every Wednesday, even in exam times. You know those? Sunday's not even a question. He's some of those guys that will do 9 and 5 or 4 or 6. Right? He is ultimate committed. And he's very, very confident in his commitment to the things of the kingdom and to the things of God. And God, Jesus asked him, look, Jesus, I want advanced Christianity. I want more. I want to inherit everything in the kingdom. Don't hold back, Jesus. What course? What thing must I do? I'm in it. Just give it to me. And Jesus says, well, have you done this and this and this? It's like, yes, 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 yes. Come on, come on, come on, come on. And Jesus says, all right. I want you to sell all your possessions. Give it to the poor. And follow me. And he says, whoa, whoa, Jesus, you don't understand. That is kind of my inheritance. That's kind of who I am. I've been raised and trained to be that and to carry that. That's kind of those things that's not separate from me. That is me. You can't ask me to lay down that. But let me tell you, Jesus, I'm willing to sacrifice whatever you ask me. 2 courses a week, I'll do it. Fasting, I'll do it. Just tell me. No, I just want you to give up that thing. You know, it's amazing when we have a master, how much we are able to negotiate with Jesus to keep that. And our negotiation powers is many times looking with the things that we will sacrifice to. I want you to lay down that relationship. Jesus, but I will pray for that person. No, I don't want you to pray for that person. I want you to lay down that relationship. Jesus, I will testify of your goodness to the people. No, I don't want you to testify of your goodness. I want you to lay down that relationship. Jesus, I want to do this career. I want to do these things. No, I don't want you to do it. Oh, Jesus, I will tell people about you while I'm there. Jesus, my fame I will use to glorify about you. I promise. No, I don't want you to do that. Have you seen our ability to negotiate with Jesus by giving an increase of sacrifice? But he doesn't want your sacrifice. He doesn't care about your next amount of fasting or next amount of testifying. If it is as negotiation power of being obedient, he wants him alone to be master. I several years ago, when I still had more students with me, I think it was before even PM ever was around, and there's a lady, a student that came to see us, and it was in exam times, and she was quite far. I think she was already busy with her honors, and she even experienced a spiritual attack on her to keep her from studying. I've prayed for that demon many times. It's the demon that disrupts people from studying well. It's all over Stellenbosch, right? And I mean, first when she comes to me and said, look, she wants me to do spiritual warfare concerning this thing, I thought she was joking, but I could see in the seriousness of her eyes, this is not a joke. This is serious. I am struggling to study. I feel so many things is distracting me, and you don't understand. I don't get the stuff in my head, and if I don't get it into my head, I'm not going to pass, and if I'm not going to pass, it's detrimental. Pray for me and get this thing away from me. I'm like, all right. So I'm ready to pray and, you know, do the spiritual warfare on this distracting demon in exam time. And as I closed my eyes and start to pray, I heard the Lord speak to me as loud and clearly. And he says to me, the reason why she's struggling to study is because she's studying something that I have not ordained her to do. So I say to her, listen, I tell you what I feel the Lord is saying. I feel like the reason why it's so difficult is not because the demon is attacking you or the devil is attacking you. The reason why it's so difficult is because you're studying something that Jesus doesn't have for you. And somehow, I mean, something rises up in her that goes like, no. Rich young ruler, no, you don't understand. My whole family has given themselves for me to get this specific degree. I have been given to this. This is my inheritance. This is everything that I am, that I've given myself to. I have to. Jesus, you have to. Change your mind. You have to. It's almost like someone is saying, and the rich young ruler was in some way so. This destiny, it's not just my little dream. You don't understand. It's who I am. Never mind that Jesus says, deny yourself. And somehow that it's so embedded in me that it cannot be touched. Yes, it can be touched. You can be touched and you will have to die. But somehow there's this idea that I've got this dream. And Jesus, would you please help me to fulfill my dream? Jesus, you can come with me on this dream. In fact, Jesus, I need more people on my team to fulfill my dream. And you are welcome to join me on this team. I need you, Jesus. I will pray for you and you can open up the doors. I can't do it. You can, Jesus. Please be on my team. But Jesus, I've got one rule. Whoever wants to be on my team must help me get to my dream, not take my dream away from me. Is that clear, Jesus? And Jesus will just not do that. And like the rich young ruler and this girl that luckily bowed her knee, even on honors level, gave it away, is today so happy in what she's doing and is flying for the Lord and a free woman. No more hindering demons are on her. But that rich young ruler, that destiny. Oh, he would have continued to sacrifice, continued to do more church courses, jump higher in worship, shout louder, I'm yours. But his life was holding tighter and tighter and tighter to what he believed was his dream and his destiny. I was never into business or money. I got saved when I was 22. And it was a miracle. It's not that I've achieved anything at that time. I was failing at everything that I possibly could. And then Jesus saved me, and less than a year after he saved me, I was in full-time ministry. My dream was to be in full-time ministry, and yeah, that happened, you know. Praise Jesus. And money was never really an issue for me, really. I can honestly say, to the detriment of my wife, she will say to you also, yeah, money has never been a problem for him. She wished sometimes it could be just a little bit more, but it wasn't. And a couple of years ago, my parents passed away. My parents owned a farm, and even it was a family farm for generations. But the arrangement with my family was that as soon as they died, my dad and my mom would have encouraged me, listen, it will be good for you not to try and farm this thing, sell it. I know you, you know us, sell that thing, all right? So, and we were very happy with that as well. You know, we will sell that farm and get the bit of inheritance out of that. That will be good for us. And so my parents passed away, and in the process of taking the estate into a place where we could sell it, we started feeling that God is speaking to us, actually, and that we should keep it. And initially we were kicking against it, and finally we decided, all right, we'll keep it, Jesus, and we will do what you want us to do. And as we kept it, that's a miracle from God. Suddenly God started blessing this farm. But you know what subtly then started happening in my mind and in my heart? That which is just before something that was given as from the hand of God becomes something that became increasingly dear to me. And initially I could have justified it by saying this, it's from the hand of God. Somehow it's all right for it to take the place in my heart that it can. You know, I want to tell you, this is one of the big tricks about the hand of God. Don't let what the hand of God has given you become your God. You know, Abram was given this glorious promises, you know, of a son which would become like the first of generations and generations, as many as the sand on the seashore, the stars. He was been promised a land. He was promised so much. And then in the midst of that promises, God once stopped with Abram. He says, Abram, let us be clear today. I've given you promises. I've given you a son, which I will take at any time that I want to. But let it be clear today, I am your exceedingly great reward. Not the promises and not the things and the careers that I have enabled you to do. As soon as anything else become your exceedingly great reward, watch out. Watch out. I will come for that. You know, one of the, I feel the whole time to jump off and run to you guys and speak to you guys. I feel so far from you. You still love me, right? I love you. I just want to say, even though there's distance between us and I can't touch you, I feel far, but yet I know we are close, all right? So, one of the things that as a Christian, you know, we some of our practices, we read the Bible, we pray, but some of the things that the Bible also says, we need to meditate. All right? And so usually it's not so difficult to teach people how to read the Bible. You just read the book, pray, you just close your eyes, speak to Jesus as you would speak to me. But meditate has become a little bit more of a complicated thing. You know, we see movies and we see how other religions do it. You do have to sit in a certain position. There's a humming sound. It must be quiet. And you pull your face really funny, put your fingers, and then there's this, and you take up the moment. And meditation is actually, from all of the things that the Bible asked me, seem quite complicated. You guys are thinking, where is he going with this now? Well, I want to tell you, all of you here know how to meditate. In fact, all of you here are meditating all the time. In fact, all of you have been meditating today. Meditation is simply our mind standing still on a specific thing that we mull over and think over. You all can do that, and you all do that. The Bible is never worried whether you will be able to. The Bible is asking, what are you meditating on? I wonder if I can step into your mind. It doesn't matter if I step in there, God is there. I wonder what your mind is mulling over. I tell you, whatever your mind is mulling over, that's your master. Whatever has been given as your meditation is your master. Whatever worry, whatever care, whatever dream, whatever thing is your master. Joshua steps into the promised land. He's just taken over from great Moses. Joshua, this is a big task, my man. You need to take over this land. You need to take over from that big shoes of Moses. Oh, there's that nation, there's that nation. Oh, there's that wall. There's 3 million people. Did I mention that? There's so much to do. Joshua, here is the strategy of the Lord. Meditate on my word day and night. I'm telling you, the busyness and the things of life is going to rip your heart away to get your mind full of other masters. Joshua, generation, if there's one thing to keep, is to keep your meditation set on the Lord. You know, in Matthew 6, in verse 1, Jesus tells us, firstly, he tells us not how to pray. And he says to us, please, when you pray, do not pray like the world. You know how the world prays? You know everybody, you put them under pressure, they're going to start to cry out and pray. And Jesus says to us, do not pray like the world. That prays like this: Jesus, give me more money. Jesus, give me a husband. Jesus, give me a wife. Jesus, make my exams pass. Oh, Jesus, make my life easier. Oh, Jesus, make my dreams come true. Oh, Jesus, give me that. He says, no. Look, you know that the world prays exactly the same. He says, no, don't pray like that. But when you pray, you say this: our Father that is in heaven, glorify your name. Let your kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven. Father, whether I'm used or not, let your name be glorified. Father, whether I'm rich or poor, glorify your name. Father, I'm driven for one thing and one thing only. Glorify your name. Father, I'm driven for one thing and one thing only. Let your kingdom come. I've got a guy in our congregation. Some of you might know him. He's well known all over. That's why I can use him in this example. His name is Shaul Reinecke. When I met Shaul for the first time, I was a little bit in Stellenbosch, and then Shaul arrived there. Shaul was a bit of a, I wouldn't say like a cultic figure, but close to a monk at least. Where most people sleep in beds, Shaul will sleep on the floor. Shaul will be happy to live on a butternut for a day. Won't cook it, that's just lukewarm, and that's just kind of comfortable. Shaul was wealthy from where he comes from. He had an engineering degree. He could do basically not anything, but he could get a good job. But Shaul refused to stick with the status quo. He sold everything and went to stay in Kayamandi, where he lived at that stage, just lived amongst the poor and wanted to give everything to them. And then one day, God came to Shaul and said, Shaul, are you willing to follow me everywhere and do whatever I tell you? Shaul is like, of course, Lord. If you sit on the floor, I'm on the floor. I know the others are comfortable in beds. You know, I'm on the floor. Others want big meals. Others want money. I don't want that. Then Jesus said to him, thank you, Shaul. I'm calling you to the rich. I'm calling you to be very mainstream and to become one of those people. It's like, no, God. I despise those and I despise to be associated with those. I make Mother Teresa look like Elon Musk. That's who I am, and that's my identity. And Jesus said, well, that's an idol, and I want that thing. I'm calling you to the rich. I'm calling you to be in the establishment. See how it flips on him. And so Shaul picked up his cross. Poor Shaul, eh? Picked up his cross. And get a job in this great company. Got a good salary. Could live in Mosterd's Drift, but you know, that's way too far for Shaul. So we just, one step at a time, one step at a time. And so he joins this company. And he's just a junior, but of course, Shaul's motto remains the same. Father, glorify your name. Let your kingdom come. Whether in Kaimandi or whether in this company, the cry remains the same. So after a while, you know, as the youngest of this group of engineers, I think there's about, Shaul, you know, if I tell the story, it sometimes gets a bit bigger. But I think about 30 engineers in this group, amongst others. So the company is struggling, but Shaul is on this board and he can help make certain decisions and so on. And then the company is going through a bit of a difficult time, and the board, they have to make certain difficult decisions. And they stood up. One of those old dogs stood up. A guy that has, you know, for fun, saved so many businesses. So skilled in what he's doing. And he stands up and he says, I think we need someone to take this business through. We need a new CEO. And everybody's thinking, oh, yeah, of course, of course. And he goes like, I think Shaul should be the one. And the rest of the board goes, yeah, we agree. We think Shaul should be the CEO. Shaul is by far the youngest, by far the most unskilled and least experienced, and really at home in Kayamandi. And now he's suddenly find himself as a CEO of this great company. I say great now, soon. For Shaul, the CEO. Now, here's the thing. It doesn't really matter whether we have money or not money, does it? That's never been the call, or that's never been the cry. Now, I'm telling to Shaul, look, it's funny, in the times that Shaul was in that company, I would speak to him and he would complain. I'm saying kindly now, but he would complain 100 times more than in his previous life. Oh, these guys are hard, man. It was so nice in this where I used to be. These guys are so difficult and so hard. Shaul, you know what God has called you for? You stick around there, man. Your cry is not anything but let your kingdom come. Now he's the CEO. Now we all tell Shaul, don't get CEO on us now. You're still the same guy. But exactly the same cry. Whether you're in the home amongst the poor or whether you're a CEO, my cry remains exactly the same. Let your kingdom come. Whether rich or poor, naked or clothed, let your kingdom come. And then Jesus went on with this prayer. And he says, God, give them their daily bread. So nice. Just give them as a good master, because you are a good master. Give me everything I need to go through this day. Provide for me. Give me my daily bread. And I'm telling you, my daily bread means for different things for different people here. For some people, a daily bread means a manicure, the best haircut ever, the best massage ever. That's my daily bread. What do you mean? But Paul clarifies for us in 1 Timothy 6. Verse 6. There's more, eh? Okay. So as I read, you go. But godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world, and we cannot take anything out of this world. But if we have food and clothing, with these we will be content. Now, the ESV says clothing, because again, clothing can mean a lot. But the New American Standard Bible, which is the more accurate one, would say, but if you have covering and food, covering, if you at least covered and food, with these we will be content. Now that doesn't mean that some of us will be rich. Some poor people like Saul will have to be rich, have to pick up his cross, and hang with the rich people. Pray for that guy. It is a tough call that he has, and I'm not even joking there. But God sets the line of what we should be content with. The good master says, if you have covering and food, that should be enough for you. You see, I've forgotten my story completely here. If you have food, you should be... Yeah. I actually have notes. I'm going to, for the first time, take up my... Now I just need to get it. Oh, man. Ha, 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 ha. I'm struggling to find them or not. We should be content. We should be content. We should be content. We should be content. This is our daily bread. Thank you, Ron. This is our daily bread. That Jesus is a good master says, if you'll follow me, I'll give you your daily bread. And with food and clothing, you would be content. Doesn't mean that some of us will have more and some of us will be less. But if contentment is our mark, this is all right for us, Jesus. And somehow in the kingdom, God will say, what is enough? What is normal? This is normal. I want to tell you something of this town that we're living in. They're going to spit out a different normal to you. There's a spirit in this town that's going to create a new normal for you. And the spirit of this world, which is in this town, will tell you what is normal. And this normal is not going to look as that normal. And somehow, you don't know it, but there's a normal set in your heart. That sometimes the normal that has been set by the spirit of this place is ultimately different than the normal of the kingdom. And somehow, sometime, those two normals is going to clash. I want to tell you guys, there's some right that we feel to need to have when it comes to decision making that at some stage will justify violating the kingdom. Father, we won't allow the normal of this world to dictate our heart. This town will push you and press you to say, no, that's not the normal. Here's the normal. You cannot settle for that. That's just ridiculous. This is the normal. To that extent, that I will choose careers, that I will choose decisions that will compromise the kingdom. I cannot do that. Last thing, and I settle with this point. Last thing. I know the process before people get married. It's difficult, you know, to find the right one. And there's all kinds of temptations in the process. Praise God for the day that we get married. And I'm able to have that part of my life finished. And now I just can walk it through. And I know for many of you, you're in that process of finding my husband and finding my wife and everything that comes with it. So I get a couple of smiles, grins here and so on. But I was once in a, or it was clear, God spoke to me and said, I want you to no longer be related or acquainted here. This is not your wife. I know you've got feelings, but that's not your wife. And so I said to the Lord, I understand that. So there's going to be nothing more, but I just want to be friends. We'll just be friends, you know. But be friends was really something to whisper to the Lord, not to the Lord, to myself, a way to keep this thing alive. And so in this process, and in this time where I did this, I once was with a bunch of guys at a camping site at Wortelgat, and as we were just walking around, a snake suddenly came out of the bush. And one guy had an oar with him that you row with. He had an oar with him. And suddenly he was like one of these bush crazy guys. And he took the oar and he put it at the neck of the snake. So he kept and he pressed the snake right there. And then he said, can someone just hold the oar? I want to see what type of snake it is. So I took the oar with him and I hold that snake down there. As I hold that snake down, it became very clear that that snake is freaking moving under there. I can feel it. You feel that snake. And you feel him fighting. And so I realize I need to press harder. Otherwise, this thing is getting loose. But then I feel like if I'm going to press harder, I'm going to kill this thing. And as I'm in this battle, the guy goes down and he shouts, "That's a boom slang." And the next moment, the snake got loose. Luckily, the snake just sailed away. But I walked away there. And the Lord spoke to me. He said to me, that which you try to maintain is impossible to maintain. You have either one or two options. Either kill it, or that thing will get loose and bite you. I want to tell you one thing that we have justified to keep masters with us. Can I tell you? I can keep this master because I can contain it. Jesus, you don't have to worry about this one. It's not like it will influence my relationship with you. I am strong in this one. Just allow me to... You're not really negotiating. You're just thinking about your own self. I'm going to maintain this thing. And I'm telling you, there's many other masters that we are keeping alive in our hearts with the justification that I can maintain it. Jesus says, it is impossible. It is impossible to have a master that you think you can maintain. Because a master will do either one or two things. You need to kill it, or that thing will get loose and bite you. Now, I will leave us with these thoughts in regards to masters. Some of us have left masters that has come from the hand of God and has become our master. Some of us have left masters in our life, and the justification is this: it's normal, God. Everybody has it. Even everybody in the church have it. It's okay. And some of us have kept masters with this saying, I can control this thing. I can maintain it. It's not killing me yet. But in whatever category of justification of a master we might have, I think Jesus wants us to choose the better tonight and to kill it. And Jesus' one request is not only that he would be a master, but that tonight he would be the only master. And so I want us to pray. Before we pray, I want us to, you know, there's many ways to kill a thing. You can have a little bit of a saying one last time goodbye with the tears and waving goodbye and says, don't worry, I'll see you again. You can have a long, dragged out feeling of gladly hoping you will die. Those methods of killing is less effective. We can go and just put that dagger in and destroy any master. Not as a friend, not as a comforter, but as an enemy of the purposes of God. Let's close our eyes. I'm coming down for this one. You don't need to see me.